Welcome, friends. James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com. It is the 14th of May, 2015. And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, standing before you today is Lionel, who may or may not be the emaciated younger brother of Joe Pesci. And he stands before you today accused of the ultimate blasphemy in the Church of the United States Incorporated. And that is the blasphemy of insulting the religious holy sacrament of voting. And I present to you as Exhibit a video that was posted to YouTube on April 14th, 2015, entitled "The Lesser of Two Evils is Still Evil," in which the accused said, "Don't vote. You don't have to vote. I tell you right now, I'm not going to write anybody's name. It's impossible to even have a president who could do anything in the first place if I even wanted that person to do anything." Lionel, this is a very serious accusation, as you know. As I say, this is insulting the most revered and holy sacrament of the Church of the United States. Please, what can you say in your defense in this case?
Well, first and foremost, there is an illusion, a delusion, an allusion, perhaps, where we are given this myth of choice. And I was trying to think of a way of looking at this. Imagine, James, we go into a buffet, and it is the worst buffet known to mankind, but you don't know this. And you're hungry, and you want to eat, and you feel the need to eat. And it is we have soiled surgical gauze in one bin. We have various forms of egesta, of animal droppings, guano, cat, porcine. You say, wait a minute, this is horrible. Aren't you hungry? Yes. Don't you want to eat? Yes. Don't you believe in eating? Yes. Have you eaten before? Yes. Well, then pick something. I don't want these. There's nothing here for me. Nothing that you offered me. Everybody else seems to like it, but I don't. So that is the election process for me. It's very, very simple. And let me also tell you something, that for the longest time, I always would think, well, maybe there's another way. Maybe there's a candidate. I'd look for some fringe guy, a libertarian or a green or a Zoroastrian or something, because I felt I had to pick something. You have to vote. Don't waste your vote. Don't give your vote away. Don't. And I did this. I would think this. Then recently I started writing in my own name. In fact, I did this last time because I voted for Obama the first time because it was a different time. He was running against John McCain and Sarah Palin. I thought, well, seemed like a good idea at the time. Second time I said, no, no, no. And I wrote my name in. I took a picture of it, snapped it with my phone, posted it, and found out that in many states of these United States, it is against the law to post, to take a picture of your own vote. So I yelled, arrest me. I beg you, arrest me. Then I started toying with this idea, and I owe this to you, my friend. I fancied myself as quite the wordsmith, quite the logodentalist, quite the sesquipedalian, quite the logophile, a man who knew everything and the meaning and the subtext. And I had always heard of this term, anarchy. Anarchy being one of two definitions, the first being chaos and complete discombobulation of order and logic and reason. The second being anarchos, a lack of not rules, but rulers. Freedom. No, I think as you said one time, no slave masters. And I thought, you know, that might be the best way, not of a choice, but the best way to describe my disgust over my lack of choice.
Very interesting. Well, in fact, that was going to be Exhibit B in today's trial. But before we get to Exhibit B, perhaps we should dwell for a moment on your analogy. Because are you trying to tell myself and the wonderful ladies and gentlemen of the jury that if you were presented with a feces sandwich and a bowl of soup with a fly in it, you would not choose either? Clearly, you have to choose the bowl of soup with a fly in it because it's much less disgusting.
Right. Exactly. And that's something, too, is where this came from, this idea also was the one who gave us ideas that, for example, light cigarettes were better than regular cigarettes. You know, so a smaller caliber bullet is better to be shot with than. So we just said this, and like most, dare I say, cephalogical memes, as well as others, we tend to just adopt them, and we don't really think about them. And we feel like somehow, if you don't participate in this, you say, okay, let's see. Hillary versus Jeb. Let's just assume that way. Well, you know, Hillary might be a Supreme Court justice, might be, but okay. Going back to, well, fossilized ejecta and excreta. Most of the bacteria is pretty much school. A fly in the soup. That might, so it's the same thing. I'm trying to think of a reason why a Hillary vote would be less unpalatable, less problematic, less frightening. What? Who? I mean, just imagine you turning to your wife and saying, "Why did you marry me?" Well, you would be the least insane, the least probably, the least likely to end in divorce. The least, what? Who selects anything like that? It's not even a selection. It's like opting, you know, saber or sword, you know, maybe. So the whole notion of selection, election, choice is completely thrown out the window when it comes to this. And what is a bigger problem in this country, James, that people don't understand, is that there is the illusion, again, of choice, that there are substantive, real, palpable, tenable, actual differences between Democrats and Republicans at that level, that if you won from column A, you will get a, for example, if I could have a computer where I could put into the computer tape a Hillary, let's just pick Hillary and Jeb. Not that they're going to be the choices, but let's just assume. And I were to put in this thought experiment, I would put Hillary in the algorithm, run the tape, look into the future and say, aha, this is where we would be. Throw in a Jeb, this is where we would be. There would be such an appreciable difference. And more importantly, one would be so much better than the other, not less worse. Again, we go back to that whole issue. The two would be virtually identical. And that aspect is so antithetical to the way most Americans think. They cannot understand. What do you mean they're the same? American politics at the presidential level are scripted in 25-year increments, maybe 25, 50-year. And if you don't like Hamlet, don't worry about Kenneth Branagh's version of this or blame Billy Shakespeare. He's the actor. It's not his say. You may enjoy yourself more, but the essence of the play has already been written. That goes more towards the absence of choice than anything else. And by the way, notice my Christmas mug for you, sir, to really throw our YouTubers off.
Yes, well, we will direct the listeners to this conversation to the YouTube version so they can appreciate that Christmas mug in all its glory. But okay, so let's step back for a moment, because it sounds like you have had quite a transition over the past 8 years. If you've gone from voting for Obama to writing in your own name to now declaring yourself an anarchist, that is a huge transition. And it's in transitions like that that I think those are the most interesting things to explore. So what was it 8 years ago that made you, or 7 years ago, whenever it was, that made you believe that in the hope and change of Obama? And what was it that convinced you that that hope and change was mere bunkum?
Well, first of all, one was history, my own history, reflex, pattern, memes. I've always voted. I used to always say this. I've never missed a vote since I was 18 years old. I've never missed a vote. I liked voting. I like the process. And by the way, let me just say something. Local level voting is absolutely real. School board, mayor, even governor, oh, there's some differences. Big time differences. You can actually see real tenable options by virtue of the fact that just maybe the form is different and the plate is different, so to speak. But when it came to Obama, I thought, well, this is, first of all, this is historic. The first African-American president, this is terrific. Seemed like a nice guy. Loved his rhetoric. Absolutely loved. I mean, I always thought politicians lied, especially after Clinton. But I thought, okay, again, I don't want, it was almost like trying to negate a possible McCain-Palin vote. I liked the idea. Though I was wondering at the time, saying hope and change, what does that mean exactly? What is that? Hope, what doesn't change? Hope he doesn't change? Hope and change simultaneously? Hope, comma, change? Or hope and or change? Didn't really think about it. Got caught up in the moment. Caught up in that feeling. I was coming a little bit still past my the terrible shock of 9/11, which really screwed me up. I thought, you know, maybe we've got a chance to really go. Well, that didn't turn out. That was, for some reason, Obama being such a fraud was more shocking to me than, let's say, Clinton or anybody else for that matter. I don't know why. Naivete, who knows why. Never again, as we say. Never again. Will I ever vote for anybody, any president? It will always be, I'm writing my name in.
Well, if enough people do that, you might become president. And then you're faced with the notion of what to do as president anarchist. Well, let's get into Exhibit B then. As I say, on May 10th, 2015, you posted, again to YouTube, a video entitled, "We're Anarchists," in which you said, quote, "When it comes to elections and it comes to politics, I don't have any connection with anybody running, anybody. So I have thought about this, and I think the only thing that might be available is that of anarchism, to pledge fealty to the notion of being an anarchist." To pledge fealty to the notion of being an anarchist, well, that's crazy talk, of course. No one wants anarchy. That's the very thing that we want to avoid, going by the first definition that you talked about earlier. Because, after all, who would build the roads?
Well, it's interesting that you say it. See, that's what people think. First, let me go back and let me change, but explore something. First of all, anarchy is a meaningless, for all practical purposes, a meaningless title for I am a vegan, okay? And you might be an omnivore or an herbivore or a flexitarian, which is my favorite, which means everything. And that's terrific. Now, if I'm electing not to eat, who cares what it is that you call this? You know what I mean? It doesn't really matter. Homosexual, bisexual, non-sexual, asexual. Sometimes the non-existence of something. So I'm saying, so I'm a believer in something which you cannot believe in. I'm a believer in the non-belief of religion. Or excuse me, well, that too, but also of politics. So it's almost a titular, theoretical, nonsensical, meaningless designation as I want freedom and I want whatever it is versus the first definition of it. The idea, though, and this is what really got me, I asked myself this question: what is it that government has provided to me that nobody else could ever do, that I could not do on my own? And I'm thinking to myself, space program. I don't see Bill Gates and others and Warren Buffett running out to say, we'll take care of this. We'll explore the genome. We'll build some roads for you. When it comes to the notion of social, I don't see them doing it. So I thought, well, maybe there's something very good that collective government involvement might do. But other than that, have the police helped me? Well, I guess. Do we need the police? Not really. Did societies ever exist without police? Yes. What about kibbutzim or certain revolutionary Spain during the revolution? But did civilizations ever exist without something called government? The answer is yes. Where have I been benefited from government or anything remotely resembling government? What? I'm oppressed. I rail against it every single day. I don't think about that about sports or television or music. Nobody's ever oppressed me. Tom Petty's never bothered me. Tom Brady may have his problem with underinflated footballs, but it never bothered me. I never felt that my life was being crushed by the heel, the boot of sports or anything. No, it's government in one form or another telling me what I can and can't do, taxing me, oppressing me. What is it that I'm hanging on to? In order for me to say goodbye to government, so to speak, in this crazy thing called anarchy, in order for me to say I'm going to somehow do this on my own, what am I giving up? What is it? So people say, they always say, well, we need stop signs. And yes, we need somebody to pick up the garbage. I think, is that really it? It's funny, Jane. Whenever people fight for government, it's the littlest things. Garbage, police, directing traffic, not education, defense, the courts. They don't say that. It's always the little things. So I rail against another form of oppression every single day of my life. So my question is, what am I hanging on to? What is it that I'm so beholden to that I don't ever want to see goodbye, Capitol Hill? What? What is it that I'm, you know, and I'm a lawyer by profession, and I swear fealty to the Constitution, and I don't want rebellion or violence, but I got to ask myself, what is it that I'm so beholden to? What was I voting for?
You know, you raise a good question, but I think I'm going to rephrase the question a little bit, because you ask what service does the government provide that could not be provided not by myself per se, but by another group, perhaps one that doesn't proclaim the legal authority to impose violence in order to enact their will. Can it be done where people engage services voluntarily and disengage with services voluntarily if they don't want them? Can we imagine such a society? And it's interesting you raise a couple of specific examples of things that people cannot imagine being done without government, such as a space program. Although there are things like SpaceX and Elon Musk and the various prizes that have been given for the, you know, trying to get the first private vehicle into space. So there are actually steps towards that. You mentioned the mapping of the genome. In fact, it was private enterprise that was the driving force behind that, and that basically allowed that project to be completed well ahead of schedule. So in fact, there are a lot of things that are done without the need for government imposition of its monopoly of violence on all of us. And I think maybe that's the way to frame it, to get people to understand this, that government, at the end of the day, is just something that is providing various services to the public, but they are providing them at the end of a barrel of a gun, an implied threat of violence against everyone who lives under their so-called presumed authority. And this goes to something that you were talking about in that We're Anarchists video, which is perhaps the way to frame it is, where does the authority, the justification for that authority come from, and how do these systems of control actually justify their own existence?
Well, yes, that's excellently phrased. I'm always a fascinating, or it's always fascinating to me, the notion of government and power. Again, being a lawyer, seeing the way this thing works, and seeing how this system of especially trials, and how people, which is very interesting, the jury is kind of us. The judge takes the verdict of the jury and then imposes a sentence. But when it comes to the best part about trials that I always liked was the jury. When individuals would sit there, they'd be very, very smart. You know, it's so funny. Ronald Reagan said, the worst thing in the world you could ever hear is, I am from the government, or government, as he would say, and I'm here to help. And if ever you would say to him, well, why don't you just remove the government? No. That's just an expression. I don't really mean that. I don't mean to. See, one of the things which I find so interesting is this notion of, in law, there are two notions, two crimes, malum prohibitum, malum in se. Malum prohibitum, or crimes or wrongs that are wrong because we say they're wrong. Not filing your taxes, running a red light, malamansay are those things, those crimes that are wrong in and of themselves. They're inherently evil. Rape, murder, molestation. You don't need a statute for that. Many times people would suggest that, and they would believe in this canard that suggested that the Judeo-Christian framework was responsible for the latticework of our government, that we take our laws from the Bible, which is bunkum, poppycock, because we take many of our laws from Rome, Roman law, which atheists. So you don't really need that. There are some laws where we would absolutely, and then you go back to this question. I'm cutting myself off, but I tend to do that. People would say, well, don't you need religion? Which is kind of in a way related to this notion of law. What would man do without the big one, the big guy looking out for us? And I always ask, would I go out and rob and murder and pillage, whatever pillaging even means? No. Why? Because I don't want to. I have no interest in that. It's not my thing. If all of a sudden, you know, at any given time, if we found out there were no laws for 24 hours, let's just assume we could just snap our fingers and for 24 hours, I don't know how you would do this, but in my thought experiment, all laws were gone. What would you notice differently? We would comport our behavior. We might somehow in your neighborhood say, you know, for that, going back to that garbage thing again and red lights, we might pick up our own. We might have citizen watch groups. We might use an inherent right of arming yourself to protect ourselves. We might somehow collectively on our own figure it out. And we'd be amazed at how good we were at figuring it out. Because when you turn something over to the government to figure it out, it's another group of people figuring it out. And what I'm saying is so heretical to the way we think in this country. For you to say anarchy, you think of somebody wearing Birkenstocks and socks, always together, long hair, throwing a trash can through the window of a Starbucks during some G8 or whatever. Where did that come from? Anarchist is like atheist. When you say atheist to somebody, they imagine this. It's almost like a cyborg. It sounds like an alien atheist. So again, if I were to say, okay, we're all for anarchy, it doesn't really mean anything because there is no, you don't have the Department of Anarchy, which is an oxymoron. But your point,
So let's bring in some of the history of that term, because it's not a term that sprang out of nowhere. It has a political history to it. And to be fair, you know, a century ago, there were self-described anarchists who perpetrated a number of high-profile assassinations, and there were bombings and things that were going on in the United States under this flag of anarchism. So it does have some of those connotations because of certain political historical connections. And of course, you raise the connection between religion and politics, and that is also part of anarchist history, going back to Mikhail Bakunin and God and the State, basically saying, you know, that anarchism is related to atheism, that it's throwing out off all the rulers, the political and the religious. And then, of course, you have the Christian anarchists and Leo Tolstoy and others. So there's all sorts of different branches and flavors of this, which is one of the reasons why I agree with you that as a label, it's exceptionally nondescriptive. It's such a wide umbrella that it doesn't really tell you anything of use, I think, in and of itself. But I let's just take for a moment that connection between religion and the state, because I phrase this, of course, as I'm framing this as a trial for your blasphemy against the Holy Sacrament of voting. And I do that, obviously, with some intent, because I really do believe that there is a certain religious fervor to this idea of the state as some sort of holy thing that has descended from the heavens to guide our society, which we cannot imagine living without. And I think that is part of the reason that people are so afraid to imagine a society in which we actually have to figure these types of things out amongst each other as equals, rather than looking to some alpha male leader that's descended from the heavens to tell us what to do. And I think part of the discomfort of that is that the society that we live in runs on a certain amount of violence, or at least the implication of violence. And people love to offload that in a way that's very, very abstract. You pay taxes to this entity, this god figure, and that god figure then does something behind the curtains, and there are policemen, and there's all these things that happen, and you're not directly connected to that. You don't have any responsibility for that. So if there is a case of police brutality, for example, well, that's not me. I'm not for that. I'm just paying my taxes to this entity that is then paying the people who are doing this. Whereas if we were actually directly contracting services with, say, a protection agency of some sort, and they were committing brutality, well, we would actually have to do something about it, like, say, giving up using that protection service. So I think that the system has been set up in a way to comfort people into not having to directly face the consequences of their actions. And that's a powerful argument, because who would want to have to actually think of these things themselves? It's a lot of hassle. It's a lot of bother. Yet we seem to be in a society where, well, hey, I'm living my life. It's not terrible. There are things I want to change, but hey, it's good enough, and it seems to function, and it's been going for a couple hundred years now, and yeah, things are getting a bit bad, but you know, it's not. Why would we want to change everything? That's too drastic a change.
So much of what we do is also based upon acclimation and habituation and conditioning, and not even thinking about this. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine today who's Lithuanian, and we were talking about Putin and Russia and Ukraine. And I asked a question. I said, what is the real beef between Ukrainian residents, let's say citizens, and Russian citizens? The answer is none. We celebrated the set, not individuals, governments, leaders, yes. Individuals, not really. You have no beef. We celebrated the 70th anniversary of VE Day. It's the most horrible story. I read a statistic that it boggles my mind, if it indeed is true. So I'll say that with this proviso. But Russia really won, if you will, the Eastern War, or the European War. Americans won the Pacific, hands down. But in one particular year, those Soviet men, born in 1923, 80% of an entire group of people born in 1923 were lost in World War II. So the number. So my question always was, what beef did German citizens have with Russian citizens? The answer is none. Did they ever, did the Cossacks ever go? No. What beef do we have with anybody? So the question is, why is there this problem? Because of governments. Americans still can't figure out Vietnam. What was Vietnam about? 58,000 Americans killed. Why?
How many Vietnamese killed?
Yeah, but not even done yet. Going back, and this American exceptionalism also, this Saving Private Ryan, you know, version of everything. More Russians, going back to World War II, more Russians died per month in the 4 years of the war than all Americans died in toto. And that doesn't mean that in any way you're going to, you know, stack Americans or humans like cords of wood. The point is, governments brought us that. People didn't. We had no beef. What is it that we cling on to? What is it? Right now we have Obama talking about TPP, about trade agreements. Who is following us? Who is surveilling us? Who is taking all of our metadata? Private industry makes some wonderful things. Our cell phone. Private people did this. Well, at least ostensibly private. Gadgets, gizmos, things to sell. What did government do? Took the data and sucked it up like a vacuum cleaner. Not people. Government did it. Our government. What is it that's the problem? So now we're fighting about who gets to watch us, who's listening, the Patriot Act. So again, it goes back to every single time. I read the paper every day, the paper, the proverbial paper, the virtual paper, and I rail against another thing that these people are doing. And then you turn to me, not you, but the royal you. At the end of the day, after I'm fighting yet again more oppression, more, you know, constitutionally bone-crushing savagery on my personal freedom, my liberty. And then you ask me, by the way, who's your choice for the next warden, the next jail keeper, the next, are you, what, why? How about undoing this? You know, Freud talked about undoing. There was this wonderful thing where people who had OCD, they were washing their hands. Freud said they're undoing something. This is trying to think about some way of well, we have to, I guess, through some ablution or something, undo, untether, pull that, get this like silly string. We've been sprayed with this. So how do you do that? Voting in new people is not going to change anything. I'm going to get Patriot Act 2. And each successive version of Hamlet, each new actor, tends to pick up where the predecessor left off and is either even more draconian. So call it what you want, but you're asking me, not you, but are asking me, vote for another one to continue this? George Carlin said, if you vote, you can't complain. Most people say, if you don't vote, you can't complain. No, you're perpetuating this. So again, if this is anarchic in my theory, what do I do with this? I continue to write my name in the ballot, as I will do until I die, because I cannot ever see me voting for anybody from any party. Look at our choices. Bernie Sanders. What is Bernie Sanders? He's the least offensive form of excreta in the buffet. Maybe he's a bit quirky. He's a bit different. I mean, and people are lauding Elizabeth Warren. Oh, saints, Elizabeth Warren. What is she offering? I don't know. She seems nicer. These aren't even choices. It's the illusion of choice. So call it what you want. The lesser of two evils, three evils, whatever. There is, I'm still waiting. I don't think someone said, I think it was one of the Berrigan brothers, if voting mattered, it would be illegal. The very fact that somebody is being considered, by definition, James, eliminates them from consideration, because they obviously are somebody who has been selected, and that is ipso facto evidence of the fact that they're part of the team, so to speak.
Interesting. Well, Lionel, let's get straight to the heart of the issue and differentiate whether this is a consequentialist argument or an argument from principle. So I myself, as prosecutor of this inquisition, am prepared to absolve you of your blasphemy in the name of the executive, the legislative, and the judicial, amen, if you are prepared to recant your blasphemy about voting and say that you are a political agnostic, not a political atheist. You are only sitting out on voting until such time as the perfect candidate comes along that agrees with you in all of your principles and would present that as their voting platform. And if you say that you are just holding out until such a person is going to come along and present themselves to you, then I'll let you get away with it. But if you were saying that there's something fundamentally wrong with the idea of voting in a kinder slave master, I will condemn you to be burned at the stake as a witch or
warlock. What you're saying is, under no circumstance ever, in no political structure, you're suggesting to me, in any country, in any time, in any situation, you're saying it is impossible for this to exist. Impossible. That when you take people, if I took five James Corbetts, put them together, and made a tribunal or a council of Corbetts, a Corbett cathedra, so to speak, that by virtue of this, they would become corrupted under their own weight of, hey, that it's impossible for people to ever do this, that no matter what, there will always be an oppressive group who really are not representative, but people who are going to contaminate the situation or whatever, that could very well be. I think even the most hardcore of atheists is saying either one of two things. There is no evidence of God that I've seen. I don't believe there ever will be any evidence, but if I'm wrong, which I do not believe I am, but if I'm wrong about anything, I will obviously change the way I think. I'm telling you right now, I cannot in any foreseeable future, especially looking at the progression, ever see there being absent a revolution, there ever being a situation where I would ever say, now that's a candidate whose platform I believe and the potential exists for real change. Cannot see that, ever. Not that it won't happen, I just can't see it.
Interesting. Well, it still sounds like you're making a consequentialist argument. And I would say, even after a revolution, I'm still not prepared to vote for any candidate to rule over me. I don't want a kinder, gentler slave master. I want no slave master at all, which is still very difficult to imagine. And I will concede that the real problem with that philosophy is how we proceed from our current statist society to a statist, non-statist society. That transition is the difficult part of all of
this. What is under a Corbett way of thinking? Do you just sit out the dance forever? I guess that seems to be what I'm going to be doing.
Certainly, I'm not going to dance in order to try to dance the state into committing seppuku. I don't think that's going to happen, and I can't imagine a way in which that will ever happen. I understand that there is a genuine debate to be had between those who think that we should use the political system to at least educate people about why the political system is itself fundamentally flawed. So you have people saying, you know, Ron Paul is a crypto-anarchist, and he was trying to educate people about freedom, and he succeeded. So I know there's a debate to be had about that and the value of that, but personally, I don't want to touch that political arena with a 10-foot pole, because I don't think any solution is going to come from that in any form whatsoever, and we have to demonstrate that we do not need the political system or entangle ourselves with it in order to bring about changes, real changes in society and in our communities.
If I could snap my fingers and create something, I would love the following one night. CNN, Fox, MSNBC, whatever, Reuters, out, who knows? You're watching and they keep going to the tally board and it's zero. Nobody has voted. No one. And they're going to say, wait a minute, let me check this again. And they're worried about, forget Diebold or those electronic. Nobody voting. And voter polls. We said, we know, James, we're live right now at the First Baptist Church, and there's no one here. Now, that would be a dream come true. What would happen? You would not even have nothing. That would be a dream, because that would say we reject the notion. We reject. What are you doing for me? That's heaven to me. The problem, and this is the sad part. My lack of faith, in addition to having a lack of faith in the system and politics, but my fellow Americans, I am woefully so upset over. Because in as much as you and I can sit here all day long talking about how we have pretty much thrown in the towel from a political or sociological point of view, we have teams of people who love this, who truly believe, who go to conventions, who have different colors, blue and red, and they wave flags. And I don't know who scares me more, the slave master, as you would say, the politicians, or the slaves themselves, who I have to deal with and pose more of a threat to me than the politicians. Because if we didn't have these other people, none of this would happen. And every single day, it amazes me what Americans are fascinated by, what they believe in, and how many times must they really think, or must they observe the fact that's evident to me, that the left-right paradigm is an illusion. Forget the election, forget the slave master. But there's that this choice, that Hillary versus Jeb, this coin where you flip it over, it's the coin. It's the same. It's just this illusion, this fantasy. I'm not sure what frightens me more. Because I think if you were to pull Hillary aside or Jeb or Ron or Rand Paul, they would say, I know. I know it's all BS. I understand that. But they don't. They believe in this. It's professional wrestling to them. It's the heel versus the baby face. They honestly think there is a good versus evil and that people like Obama are bad, depending upon where you are. So...
Well, I, and there's a lot to be explored there. For example, deconstructing the ridiculous left-right fantasy as a way of introducing people to the greater concept of freedom generally, I think is probably a useful way of proceeding if we're interested in persuading people rather than simply talking in vague terms about general political philosophies. But that's probably another conversation. Lionel, any final thoughts before we wrap up this Inquisition?
Yes, I must ask you this one question, and this is just out of my own curiosity. What was your moment? Did you have an epiphany moment, or were you born with this brilliant incredulity?
Brilliant incredulity, a good name for an autobiography. No, I certainly was not born this way, and in fact, I did vote in Canada, at least in one federal election that I can think of.
What was that? What was that moment, that denouement? What was that thing?
I don't know if I can say there was a moment. It was a process, and it was a process of becoming first a minarchist. Oh, yes, well, we need government. Of course we need government, but just less of it. And then eventually dropping that pretense and realizing that if we follow that through to its logical conclusion, then no, in fact, it is government itself that is the problem. I don't know off the top of my head. I do not know if there was a penny drop moment. I certainly can't think of one. But I can certainly, I think that the course of the Corbett Report, since I started in 2007 until 2011, 2012, when I first started to really identify with voluntarism, I think that whole process is part of it. And I think it comes, for me, in a very different way than I think a lot of other people may come at this. But for me, it was the revelation of the fundamental lies underneath this system, the 9/11 lies and things like that. Once that is brought into the equation, I don't see how anyone can believe in the charade of voting.
9/11. I don't want to go through this. Was the event of my life. That's when everything, not that the light went on, lights went on, runway lights, bright lights, Klieg lights, spotlights, you name it. And I got to see something in real time and saw how many people were looking at the same event that I was looking at and saying something completely different. And then I still am seeing this today. That so contaminated me. And it was like, you know, when you have that bright light in your eye and the rhodopsin levels are affected and you can't, it takes a while for your eyes to get back for that flash. That flash has never left. I've never regained focus. Well, perhaps maybe too much. It was that moment when wars started. When invasion started and imperialism started, and I saw this. And not only that, there were two moments of fright. One was to see the government, but the other one was to see my fellow Americans into this lockstep, into this drumbeat. And I'm saying, what are you doing? You're being played like a fool. Soylent Green are people. You know, name the analogy. And so it was a convergence. And if it wasn't for 9/11, I probably would still be the old me, dare I say.
I think there's a lot of people listening who will have a similar experience with that. So it's an interesting subject to explore in greater depth. We will leave that for another time. First, let's direct people to your media. Obviously, LionelMedia.com is the place to go, but YouTube, Twitter, where else should people find you?
YouTube is at Lionel Nation. Twitter, I love Twitter. I am a Twitter.
I've noticed you are on Twitter all the time. So if people are wondering where you've been for the past hour, it's been in this conversation, but I'm sure you'll be right back on.
Right, exactly. That's at Lionel Media. Drop me an email if you'd like, lionel@lionelmedia.com. And James, as always, I thoroughly enjoy not only just doing this, but spending time with a man of your absolutely bubbling Nagian sapience and sagacities.
Your flattery will get you nowhere with this Inquisition. I condemn you to be burnt as a blasphemous warlock. All right, well, Lionel, thank you again for your time. It was a very interesting conversation. I'm looking forward to another interesting chit-chat in the future.
As am I, sir. Thank you.